Meeting is a 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 meeting. Now, what is a meeting? A meeting is many things. Many people feel that a meeting is where people get together to share ideas and discuss problems and solutions and talk about concepts and ideas. And a meeting is all those things. But our dear friends in Switzerland are considering establishing a meeting. Now, there's a group called the Quakers. They're a very wonderful group, and they're very sincere. And they don't call their church a church. They call it a meeting hall. And they have meetings in the meeting hall. And in the meeting hall, they talk about religion. They talk about the Bible. They talk about all these things. Now, President Nixon, Richard Nixon, was a Quaker. And this was the type of background that he has had. Now, what do they talk about at these meetings? Anyone is allowed to get up at any time and say anything they want. They can talk about the Bible, they can talk about philosophy, they can talk about their life, they can talk about anything they want. And it makes a nice outlet for people. Well, our illustrious students in Switzerland are creating a meeting. Presently they met at Herbert's house. And at Herbert's house they had, it's about six people there, had a real nice meeting. And they thought they should do it a little more often. They should plan them a little more frequently. So once a week, they're going to have a meeting. And a different person is going to be in charge of the meeting and take care of the goodies for it, make sure that it's all handled nicely and they have a nice place to meet, probably at different people's homes, which would be nice. Except when people are coming to a meeting and they don't know which person's home is going to be held in, they're just sort of up a creek without a paddle. They have no idea of where to go and how to get there. So this is one of the benefits for having a meeting place, having a place where the meeting is always held. And it's always held at a specific time on a specific day. And so I'm going to recommend to our erstwhiles in Switzerland that they consider a definite place, a definite time, and a definite way. Now, each one of them can be in charge of the meeting on a given day, but they hold it at a definite place. Now, I would think Herbert's place would be marvelous to have a meeting. Or using Herbert's pharmacy would be a marvelous place to have it upstairs there. In not all the rooms, but in one of the rooms. They wouldn't need the big room at first. That would come a little later. But this would get all these people coming there. But then you'd have to go downtown Zurich. Of course, if they have to go to Ebmettingen or any other silly pronounced place in Switzerland, you think that's silly? Where I was born is Wauwatosa in Milwaukee. I mean, you know, how strange can those Chippewa names be? They're Indian names. And Milwaukee is the meeting place of the tribes. And Wauwatosa means firewater. They kept their firewater out of town so it wouldn't be at the meeting tribes. But anyhow, so Ebmettingen would be a nice place to meet. Or at Basel, at the home of Monica. She's got a big old pad there that would make a beautiful meeting room. Or at Rosalie's living room. It's not very large, but it's very effective because it's so empty. It would make a very wonderful meeting place. And who else is there? Over at Christina's house. She just got herself a new house. How big it is, that remains to be seen. But you see, having it in one place all the time is excellent because then people know where to find it. They know how to prepare to go there. And they know whether they're going to be sitting on the floor or in chairs or whatever they're going to do. In Herbert's meeting hall, they can do either and be very comfortable. Now, I'm going to recommend this to them. I'm going to recommend to them that they have a place that they go to like that as a definite place to meet, because then everyone can know what they're going to do. Now, one person can be in charge of the meeting each week, a different person, or the same person can always be in charge, but I think that might not encourage others to develop their talent of leadership. So, you have Herbert, You have Monica, you have Christina, you have Adrian Meyer-Bessant. She's one of our practitioners. And you have Gertrude, of course. And you have, who else? You have lots of them. There's just five. So if they alternate, then they'd be, so to speak, handling it every other month, one time, which is not a big deal. And it would be really something very special. Now, what would they do during the meeting? What would you do during a meeting in a church? Well, what you would do basically would be to present a philosophy. As we here every meal have a 15-minute talk on some aspect of philosophy, they could have it on some aspect of philosophy. Now, it doesn't have to be the deep, deep, deep down cousins end of it. It can be the periphery, because most people are ready for the periphery of philosophy rather than the depth. How can I use that philosophy in my life? How can I train my children? Well, they can listen to our tape on children. And they can learn that when you treat yourself as a child, then you start understanding a child. And when you respect a child and all that a child stands for, then wonderful things can come out of it. And going to that, back to the basics. Now, we have ministerial tapes that are available for all of our ministers. They can use that to understand how to conduct meetings. Now, wouldn't it be interesting if the church would have a meeting one Sunday on abundance, how to develop more abundance, how to live in the, what a phrase do we use? I am
independently
wealthy. And then what about wholeness? What phrase do we use?
More than perfect.
I live in my eternally perfect ideal spirit, mind, and body. I'm whole and perfect, and all that good stuff. There's a lot of good statements for that. Right now, what about relationships?
I'm surrounded by harmonious beings and harmonious circumstances.
Super. You could take off on that for ages. Right? Now, what are some of the others? Success in business?
I'm success in all my endeavors.
Endeavors. I'm successful in all my endeavors. Right? What about our investments?
Our investments are high return and stable.
I mean, we have basic phrases which are kind of nice lead-outs. Do anything you want. Take off, you know. Have fun. And go for it. Now, when you're over there, you're going to be there for a month. You can have a chance to send four meetings. And you tell them, look, I'm going to be here four times, and that's all I'm going to be here for another 10 years. So let me take these four meetings. And I will make them sparkle. I've been practicing on campus every third day or something, and just having a ball. But wouldn't it be exciting? Wouldn't it be exciting? And then you would have somebody else, like Monica serves the coffee, you know, because she's good at coffee, and have somebody else serve the cookies or whatever, you know, and have somebody else clean up. And all you do is just prepare the information and give the talk. Wouldn't it be great? And then have someone else send out the flyer, which goes to all the people who are interested, what the topic is going to be. You have to send out little reminders. It sort of encourages them. Say, today we're going to talk about sex. We're going to demonstrate sex in the chapel. How sex how sex should really be conducted for its most beneficial use. And you'd probably have quite an audience.
And Anita is the teacher.
The teacher, of course. Mm-hmm. And so Anita stands up there and says, sex. The most important part of sex is bitte?
The foreplay.
So we're going to discuss foreplay today. What is foreplay all about? Is it eroticism? Is it something to get you all excited? Or is it get something to tell you how much I really love you, how much I really care about you, what you mean in my world, in my life, and how I delight in your presence, you know, since sex is very much a relative thing, you know. And the act of copulation, that is the act of copulation. That might be called the finality of sex. But who wants to end sex? Who wants to end the foreplay? The foreplay should go on throughout your married life. Throughout your married life, you know. And it should go on throughout your relationship, whatever it may be. Some people never get married, and they are very, 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 very happy. Other people get married, and after 2 years, they want to call it quits. I got enough of this. And what do they have enough of? They have enough of the lack of foreplay. See, after a year or two, foreplay ends when it's not sincere, when you don't have the feeling that you really want to share yourself with somebody else, and you find them obnoxious. Of course, you really find yourself obnoxious. If you were to go out and have a relationship with anybody else, you'd feel totally dirty. And that's what you should feel. You should feel dirty if you are violating a vow that you have made. And if you don't like the vow, change it. Say, no more, you know, getting a divorce or whatever. Kill the other person, you know, then it's all over with. Of course, you can't go around killing people. That's against the law. So rather than kill somebody, just separate. Isn't that a lot better? You all look so complacent here when I say kill them. So, that's all right, that's okay. Herb said, kill them. You don't do it in my name, I tell you. No, I've never had to kill anybody yet. I never will. Because when I cease a relationship which I don't have, I would just have them go their happy way. Now, what's his name, Trump? Donald Trump? Well, Donald Trump is so loaded that every woman who has a relationship with him comes away very happy. They don't care. They enjoyed having the lots, but they enjoy better having the little, which is all theirs. All theirs. 8 or 10 or 20 million dollars, you know. Do anything they want with it. It's very comfortable, you know. So, Donald Trump, he takes care of those relationships that way. But that's not the kind of relationships you're going to be talking about in your meeting. In your meeting, you're going to be talking down more down-to-earth relationships, you know, like the little farmer who owns 100 hectares in Switzerland worth $5 billion, you know, or the little storekeeper who's got a little shop on the corner that covers maybe a postage stamp and is worth maybe $30 million. Yeah, land is so valuable over in Switzerland, I tell you. So if all the Swiss would sell out, they would be all rich, 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 rich. And of course they are already, because they know how to live and they know how to do things now. I'm making this sound a little bit humorous, but in truth, your meeting should be about what people are interested in. It should be about what people want to hear about, what delights them. Now, what do people want to hear about? People want to hear about that which is going to improve their own life. And if you can't tell people what's going to improve their own life from your own experience, then you're not very attentive, you're not very aware. So be aware. Be aware of what improves life for people. A meeting is a meeting is a meeting only when the meeting touches upon the interests of the people who are there. Because they won't come back if their interest has not been piqued at the meeting. So always be very careful about that. Be very alert that your meetings touch the people's interests, touch the joy of their heart. Touch them where they have their children, where they have their parents, where they have their grandparents living with them, where they have all of these beautiful things in their life. Today, Irene is visiting with her mother. Yesterday, Stefan visited with his sister. And he drove over there. On the way to his sister, he had to meditate. Nothing else to do. So he meditated. And he meditated on "I like me." And it completely changed his life. It completely changed his attitude. He says, I know what I want to do now. It's just I've got to come to terms with myself because I have obligations that I have not met. And I want to be true to myself. And so you see, he's facing these things very nicely. Now, each one of us want to face these things nicely because then as we go on to our spiritual development, we will feel more happy about it. But I guarantee you, if you say, "I like me," and boom, you like yourself, you have no past. You could owe the world, but you have no past. You don't exist anymore. You're not dead, but you don't exist anymore. You have no past. So Don't get yourself into debt and then just think you're going to have your illumination and get out of it. But just start thinking now you have no past. And live in that awareness and that happiness. But that's what a meeting is. A meeting is a meeting does for you. Because the meeting moves you in that beautiful way. Eat until you are full. Eat until you're full. A lot of times, we don't eat until we're full. We just take a little bit. And we wonder why it is that we're hungry. We just don't eat until we're full. And we could. Why is it we don't eat until we're full? No, basically, we don't eat until we're full because we are told that we should not take too much to eat. We should take portion-sized food. And that's all very good. Well, this same situation is in many other areas of our life, too, where we eat until we're full. We go to school and we learn subjects, and the subjects are our portion. And every day the teacher gives us a portion that she thinks we can learn, that we can assimilate. And so we take that lesson and we take it home and we assimilate it. Well, now two-thirds of the students assimilate far faster than the teacher gives them material. But the students think they cannot assimilate faster than the teacher gives them material because the teacher knows what they're doing. They're giving them only what they can digest or ingest at one sitting. So, the teacher has a program, it's called Special Credit Program, Extra Credit. And you can read another book and get extra credit. You can do all these other things and get extra credit. And who are the people who get the extra credit? They're the people who want to show off to the teacher. They're the goody-goodies. And the people who are just as smart as the goody-goodies don't read the books and don't do the extra credit thing because they don't want to seem like their teacher's pet. Because they're kidded by their peers if they do any extra work. In the Navy, there was a statement, never, never, never volunteer for anything. Mm-hmm. Because if you volunteer, you're going to have quite a project. And nobody's going to respect you for volunteering. Just let them appoint you. Let them say, okay, you guys do this, you guys do this, you guys do this. But the geniuses volunteer. The geniuses go to the officer, the person in charge, and they say, you know, I really am quite good at computer. I'm quite good at this here. Is there a chance that I could work in that area? And the executive says, my goodness, yes, come to my office. I can use an eager beaver, someone who really wants to work and wants to do something, not just putting in their time because they're in the service. And so this guy does the work, and he climbs right up the ladder. Pretty soon he is a first class, second class, and third class officer. Obviously, it's the other way around. You start third class, second class, first class. And then he goes into a sergeant or petty officer, whatever it is that he's working on, and he works right on up. And then everybody who watches him, they think, how come he's got all these goodies? How come he gets to work in the office there and use the typewriter, type letters to his sweetheart? How come he gets to do these things, you know? And they only say it for a moment or two, and then they go back to reading their funny books and their other things that don't really encourage them to grow and be beautiful. Now, a lot of people go to college, and they get a college education, and they're doing quite nicely. And so then they get in the Army or the Navy, and they apply for whatever their college education can help them do. But they're always a little reluctant because everybody says, don't volunteer for anything. Don't get your name on any of their lists. They'll just work the heck out of you. And these guys don't care. They are leaders, pushers. They're people who are movers. And so they sign up. Now, they're not at the top. They're not at the executive level of giving orders. They're at the level of taking orders, but not only taking orders, of having beautiful things to do that encourage them and excite them. They're doing work, keeping a roster on all the people there and keeping records of everything that's going on, and they just keep asking for more and more and more. They never get full. And of course, as soon as they come out of service, they're geared to go to work. They're geared to be busy. They're geared to jump right into whatever field they want to be and be very successful, whereas the others have to take a vacation after they get out of service. They have to take time. Well, it's been so tough. It's been tough. Reading comic books all day long, you know, at night, just doing nothing but watching television or something, whatever. There's nothing to it in their boot camp and in their special training programs. And when it's peacetime, there's nothing for these guys to do. All they do is just live a normal life. Go home to their kids and family, if they have any, or they are in the barracks, and then they go out and drink and come back and whatever they do. Now, people who are winners, people who are doers, goers, movers, they're the ones that eat to their full. They go in there and they just work their heads off. They don't care whether they get credit for it or not. They go there because they're staying in the flow. They're staying in the way of doing things. Now, some people go to prison. And when they go to prison, they just sit there and watch television and do nothing. And that's accepted. But others, they take classes. They learn how to run computers. They learn how to run typewriters. They learn how to repair cars. They learn how to repair airplanes. They learn how to do many, many, many things, but they have to go and sign up for it. And in most of the classes, there are vacancies because the guys don't sign up for it. They don't feel they want to do it. They feel downtrodden because they're in prison and then everything is bad, and so they don't sign up. In the service, people think, I didn't enlist. They took me in, conscripted me, and so I'm not going to give them any more than what I must, you know. So, they're the losers. The losers are those who just eat a little bit of all the goodness that they can have, just a little bit. They don't involve themselves 100%. They don't eat to the full. They don't get sit down like, have you ever seen Bill Gates? No, you haven't. Ever heard about Bill Gates? Yes, you have. What does Bill Gates do when he goes into a restaurant, especially when he goes into a Pizza House or into McDonald's?
He buys himself a hamburger or two.
What?
A hamburger.
Of course. Now, that's true. That's not my point, though. When he goes in there, he takes it and wolfs it down, and he eats it with great gusto and great enthusiasm, and then he sits back, oh, that was nice, you know. He doesn't nibble at it like a dilettante. He doesn't just work at it as though he really doesn't want to eat it. He eats it because he loves it. He doesn't buy something unless he loves it. He can afford to buy anything, and he buys hamburgers. So Bill Clinton was the same way. President of the United States could have had gourmet meals every single day of his term in office, you know. But he loved his hamburgers. He would go for a jog in the morning and go by the McDonald's, and he stopped by in McDonald's. They knew he was coming, and they made a special hamburger with everything on it for him, and he ate it. The same with Bush, George Bush, the father of the president today. His father used to go for walks, not runs, and he would walk around the block, and he'd always go to the hamburger place to have hamburgers too. And his son loves hamburgers. They all do. And it's not the hamburger, but it's the fast food type of thing. And they just eat to their fill. But they're men of dynamo. They're in there working. They're in there showing themselves. They're in there doing their life and having loads of fun, just having a wonderful time because they're being themselves. Now, are we ourselves when we pretend that we don't like the work that we're doing? are we ourselves when we take work that we are given to do and we sort of shuffle it to one side, acting as though, you know, it's not really important to do? Are we ourselves when we do those things? Not hardly. Not hardly. When you wash clothing, and that's your job. Let's see who's washing clothes. Anita. So, Anita, when you wash clothing, do you open every single pocket to make sure nothing is in there?
Yes, by experience.
By experience. Well, that's better than not at all. But always open every pocket. There may be money in there. There may be a pen in there, which would cause a catastrophe in the laundry, and has. But, you see, when you do whatever you do with all your heart and love, not that it's a job. Why didn't Sylvia take that pen out of her pocket? What did Ingeborg leave all that money in her pocket for? What is this about? What's that about? John left all those bones for the dog that he brought home in his pocket. You know, and then here's crunch, crunch, crunch. Now, golly, Moses, isn't that terrible? Yes, it's terrible that Anita didn't go into every pocket and clean it out. That's part of doing the laundry. Doing the laundry is not, everyone should truly clean out their own pockets. That's the fact. But everyone doing the laundry should check every single pocket. So if someone inadvertently leaves something in there, it will not get into trouble. A person who loves their job just never gets enough of it. Never gets enough. They could eat and eat and eat their job all day long. Take, for instance, an artist who's painting a mural. He forgets to eat. We were talking with Rhonda, and Rhonda was, she came to have lunch with us, or wasn't it lunch or breakfast, lunch or something, and it was late in the day, I think it was 2 o'clock about that time, and so she said, I forgot to have breakfast. She was so busy getting ready for the seminar, so excited, so thrilled with how things were going along and doing her thing, that she'd forgotten to eat breakfast. Well, I kind of imagine she forgets to eat meals oftentimes because she's a very thin lady. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can put your two hands around her. But she is a nice person, and she is a goer. Now, is she hungry? No, not for food. She's hungry for activity. She's always into activity, always into doing things, always into, you know, having a lot of fun. And this is what we should do. We should just stuff ourselves with opportunities to have fun. Stuff ourselves with opportunities to do our job. Stuff ourselves with opportunities to read all these magazines here. Vroom! Quick and hurry. I was thinking of getting a course for all of you. It said within 1 week you could read all those magazines in one sitting.
I tried that.
You tried that? Anyhow, that's what it said. And I think that that'd be fascinating to be able to do it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Then what would you do? Would you read those magazines or would you read other books?
Other books.
You'd read other books that had more substance to them. This is just passing fancy. True, it sort of improves your thinking on current activities that are going on in Practical Builder and so forth like that, and in Mechanical Science magazines. They're fascinating, but hey, when you start using your own brain, you start coming up with ideas that you never even dreamed about. What we want to learn to do is eat to the full of those things that are beneficial to us. And the things that are beneficial to us are whatever it is our heart directs us to do. And whatever that is, go for it. Now, you may be working on what your heart directs you to do, and then you're shifted. You're shifted from that to another area, and you say, I was doing so good there. I wanted to keep on doing it. I was working real hard. Yeah. Now take that same application and put it on the new job, whatever it may be. Because if you do that and you do this, then every job is going to be fascinating. Everything is going to be wonderful when you take that same incentive, that same desire to be perfect and be wonderful. You can do it. Everyone can do it. But do you want to do it? No, we get status quo. And when we get status quo, we don't want to change anything. We don't want to shake the boat. We want to always have our eggs for breakfast and our toast and cheese sandwiches for lunch and our meat and potatoes for supper, no change, no change. You know, many families around the world do that. Mm-hmm. Not because the mother can't make the meal, but because the family is satisfied with that. But we want to raise our sights, and we want to eat to the fill of everything we do, whether it's our food, and when we're filled, stop. Stop! That's the hard thing to do. When you're filled, stop. If there's something on your plate, that's okay. Leave it. And when you have finished your job, are you happy with yourself? Are you satisfied? Then stop. But always eat to the full. Give to the full. Do everything to the full. And you'll be the happiest, most contentest person you could imagine. I love you. Why people visit the monastery.